14 days since I looked into your eyes. Love's not here, didn't take me by surprise. I could even feel it when I'm walking your way. Lean to kiss your lips, but you turn the other way. I've been gone for a while, I'll admit. But you know I never do you wrong, I'm legit. Didn't even smile when I walked through the door. What's up, everybody? This is Jason V. Welcome to another episode of the Local Color Podcast. I'm here with my guest. I would introduce him, but I think he's better at doing that himself. So what's your name, sir?
Peace, everybody. This is the one and only Mad Mastermind, Josh Stokes. How you guys doing?
I'm doing well, man. How you doing?
I'm awesome, man. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate you calling me to be here. It means a lot.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on the show. And we definitely want to give a big extra special shout out to the man running the board right now.
No doubt.
The one and only Mateo. We're actually recording this live at the Moose House. Produced by, Moose House Records. So let's get started here, man. Where are you from?
I'm from here. Born and raised Baltimore, Maryland. All my life.
Did you live in the city or the county?
I lived in the city. I was on the east side. Stayed over there till about 13, and then from 13 I moved over to the west side, and I stayed over there until about like my mid-20s.
What was the biggest change moving from east to west? Was like, did your family just need a change of scenery or what?
My father just got a bigger house.
He said we moving up.
Hell yeah. So like we got a bigger house, and it was just like, oh, okay, cool. I honestly didn't even pay sides any mind. I guess like I just never really cared. It was just like, oh, okay. Because you know, like a lot of people that are really in that will be like, yo, East Coast dudes do this, West Side dudes do this. And it's like, for real, I never even noticed.
And I was gonna ask that next, is what was the biggest change culturally when you were going from East to West? Did you even notice that?
I really didn't. I honestly didn't. The city just seemed like the city.
It was just one big.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just Baltimore.
Exactly.
There was no real difference.
Yeah, and like and people really can break it down like regionally, like from the east to the west. And I don't know, I never even took the time to like really think that hard on it, because to me it was just like everybody was the same.
And what was growing up for you like? What did your parents do?
Well, my father is a pastor, so that's what he did ever since I was about 9 years old. And that was about it. My father was a pastor. My mother was a singer, and she directed the choir, and she did that stuff. And I went to school because I had to, but like if I could have just played music all day, I would have done that like a motherfucker, just because like that's all I ever wanted to do anyway. I hated school.
Really? And yeah. That was going to be my next question. So even though you hated school, were you in school at a time that they still had a music curriculum, or was that already...
Yes,
over and done with?
They did. I was going to music class. I was going to music class up until about, I want to say the 10th grade. Yeah. They had actual classes where they had the instruments. They had movies and things they would show you. They even had a period where they would let you bring in your own music. You could play your own music in school and stuff like that. So, yeah, I definitely remember that. That was
cool. What'd you bring in?
I brought in Chicken Grease by D'Angelo, and everybody was just like, what the fuck is this?
And this was in 10th grade?
Yeah, so this had to be about 2005, maybe. Yeah, so I was playing that, and everybody was like, oh, okay. Kind of like, you know, we would expect this from him.
Oh, okay.
So it was like,
and what, like your music teacher was just like,
he was like, that was nice, because he was like an actual musician. So he used to like, he was one of those like white dudes that wanted to be black in the 70s. If you can remember one of these guys, but he's like 40 now and he's got the gray hair, but he still got that like black way, like he's singing and playing a keyboard and shit. Like he was that guy.
Okay.
So he dug what I brought. He was like, that's nice, man.
Did you
remember that?
Were you able to forge a connection with that music teacher? What was the teacher's name?
Man, I forgot. No, I didn't. I just remember that one day. I also remember another day where I was like kicking his door like boom, boom, boom. And like, cause he wouldn't let me in. So like we went outside and like had a talk, and then we actually like we kinda
And he was like, don't kick my door again, please.
Yeah, he was like, man, if I told your dad this, you wouldn't like. I was like, yeah, you're right. So we had like a conversation. And I was like, all right, cool, I'll chill. Like, I don't know why I was mad that day anyway. But, you know, I just did that. But we came to that agreement. But no teacher really stuck in my head because no teacher really impacted me. I didn't really like school. So I wasn't really interested in what came with it. You know, teachers were cool for the time being because I had to be there, but I didn't want to know them. I remember there was a guy that found out I played the drums, and he was trying to get me to join the school band, and I was just, like, curving the shit out of this dude. Like, yeah, I'm coming. And I would just, like, never show up. So I think he just, like, finally got the point, like, okay, yo, I get it. Like, just tell me you're not going to come. But it didn't have anything to do with the choir. I just didn't like doing stuff concerning school.
A lot of artists and rappers and stuff, they first discover their love of music with the church choir or extracurricular activities.
Right.
You know, like George Duke, world famous musician.
Absolutely.
May he rest in peace.
Peace.
The story goes that his mother took him to a Duke Ellington concert, and when he saw Duke Ellington playing piano, he just like lost his mind and was like, get me a piano, like that's what I want to do. And you talked about it with your mother directing the church choir and being a singer. Is that where you caught the music bug? Was it family, or did you just come about it differently?
That shit was like some X-Men superhuman, just like in the bloodstream type shit. Because when I was born, it was just like, I had no other choice but to do this. Like ever since I could remember, it was just like me hearing music, me just familiar with music, me just really enjoying music and me trying to play music and trying to figure out music and just constantly growing in music to like me, you know, having pencils as drumsticks to pens and just continuing to just elevate to the next level. Like it's always been that. And then my mother's side of the family is singers and musicians, and my father's side of the family are singers and musicians, but just very musically inclined. So, you know, you bring those two things together and it was just like that on steroids, and they just had me, and it just turned into this thing where it was just like music. And that was just it. And for some kind of reason, I just became known for that. Like, Josh is gonna play music. You can just tell, like, he's always walking around with sticks. Like, and for me, it was just like, I didn't know any other way. Like, to this day, like, I still don't. That's just what I was literally born to do. I can't even explain it. Like, my parents love music, but it wasn't to the point that they were willing to die for it or, like, not be able to pay rent for it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm really to the point where it's like, yo, if I don't have no money, I don't give a fuck if I can go and play a show tomorrow, because I just like playing music. If you can get me an airplane ticket to go to California and it's going to be a show there, or even if I got to get it myself, I'm going to do it because I really want to do it. For me, it's not necessarily about, hey, Dad, guess what? Because that's not it for me. Like, I just like doing it. I got a show tomorrow, a session the next day, another show after that. That's it for me.
So looking back, you talked about not really liking school. Do you feel like you missed an opportunity to join the band? Do you feel like it would have somehow enhanced your skill if you would have just joined the band, or you're just like, ah?
Absolutely not. And the reason I say that is because, yo, all of my real learning experience came from the streets, not the physical streets, but me being out in the field, working with other professional musicians, working with other writers, working with other producers. And even if it wasn't an official thing where it was like, yo, I'm sitting in the studio with them, it was like, yo, I'm riding to DC with them to a show. And the whole time I'm riding, they're showing me music. They're spitting game to me, telling me how it goes. You know what I mean? Not just the, yo, this is tight, this is dope, but it's like, get ready for this.
Just absorbing all that
exactly.
knowledge.
Exactly. And them allowing me to be around other guys that are doing it. You know what I mean? That school band wasn't going to do that for me. You know, it's just a bunch of, you know, no diss, but who knows what they're doing. But 9 times out of 10, they're not doing what I'm trying to do.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I feel like me being in the field, I wish I would have met somebody like Blackstar earlier.
DJ Blackstar?
Yeah.
Okay.
I wish I would have met him when I was in high school. I wish I would have met or been able to hook up with Easy when I was in high school. just because they really had the tap into the well of what was about to happen. You know what I mean? If there's anything I wish I could change, I wish it would be that. But I think everything went the way it was supposed to go. You know, I still wound up there.
Okay. And what school did you go to?
When I first started high school, it was a little broken off part of Northern after they had broken it down into all the schools because it had gotten so bad. It was like a little trailer near Robert Poole Middle School that I went to. And then I got transferred to Forest Park High School.
And I went there. You finished up school there?
Well, if you want to say that, I didn't graduate high school. I stopped going in the 11th grade.
Oh, really?
Yep.
So that was just a year after showing the music class Chicken Grease.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. How did your parents feel about that?
They didn't dig it too much. Socially, you're supposed to do these things. So, like, if you don't do it, you're looked at as, like, oh, what's wrong with him? And then what's wrong with them? Because he's your son, you know what I mean? So then it becomes a reflection like, oh, shit, so what are they going to say about us because he's not graduating from high school? When it was like, fuck those people. Unfortunately, we don't know or don't really have the opportunities to do what it is we really want to do in our lives. So when you meet a person that does, it's almost like, what's wrong with you? And it's like, damn, for real? Okay. But yeah. I was willing to take that, even at 17. If you want to call me dumb for dropping out of high school, yo, the minute I dropped out of high school, like the minute, as I look back at it, it's so amazing because this type of stuff always happens. The minute I dropped out of high school, I was getting phone calls to like write for other artists and start to play for artists and travel with artists. The minute, yo.
So, and that's something that happens where it's like, you can't really ignore that sign.
Right. Exactly. So it was just like, do you know who I am? No, but I don't need you to. But I know, like, for the last 15 years, I've been constantly working on my craft, sharpening my tools with amazing, talented people that are very particular. So they're going to tell you what they like and what they don't like, and they're going to be very forward about it, which is good because it helps build that character so that when you get to that level that you want to be at, you're used to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And there comes a certain point where creatively you can't let criticism, constructive or otherwise, deter you or stop you. And frankly, sometimes the criticism that you get, it's like, this isn't something that I really want to admit about myself, but now that somebody else is telling me, I need to come to terms and realize, like, maybe I need to switch something up, or maybe I'm not as good as I thought I was at this particular aspect, right, but I'm a lot stronger in something else. So I just got to do something to round myself out. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And I tried to go and, like, get my GED and stuff, but I just could not keep focus in those classes.
You're just more about the music.
Yeah, I just couldn't. Like, and I would try, but I was like, man, what the fuck am I doing here? Like, everything just sounded so confusing to me. Like, man, I gotta get out of here. It just wasn't for me. Everybody has their own path they're supposed to take.
Do you still keep in contact with your parents?
Well, my mother died in 2006, so that's been a minute. I feel like I still keep in contact with her in, like, other ways, though, just because I feel like she still is around and knows what I'm doing and knows, like, the intent in which I'm doing it. I talk to my dad a lot. We keep in contact. I go over there and chill with him and check up on him a lot.
Do you have any siblings?
I have a sister. I have a younger sister. Her name is Bobby Rush. She's also a really dope artist. She's a singer and a painter. She does little writings and excerpts. She has her own website and everything. So, yeah, I have a sister. And I have two older brothers as well.
So let's talk about the beginning of your music career, when you first started writing, all that kind of stuff. I take it that was, what, in high school that you really started taking it seriously? Or was it, like, once you dropped out?
Honestly, I started writing around, like, 11 or 12. But not seriously, though. But, you know, you just start. I would say for real, though, it was definitely around like 13 or 14. I started writing poetry a lot, and then I just realized, like, whoa, I can write songs and stuff, too. So I started this little group. It was like a gospel group that I had my sister singing. Like, my sister was like the fucking guinea pig, yo, and I always tell this story. Any idea I had where there was a girl singing or there was a girl ad-lib, I'd be like, Ariel, come here. And she would come down and just like, I need you to say this. So I started this group where it was like, okay, I know I don't want to sing, but I have these song ideas. I need somebody to sing these ideas. Ariel, come here. So I would just get her to like sing all the songs that I wrote. And I would just like, you know, come up with these beats. My dad, you know, I said he had a church. So he had this keyboard, this professional keyboard called the Triton Pro. Like Pharrell made the grinding beat on it. Like Scotch Storch would use it. Timberland, like it's like a professional board. Mm-hmm. And you were able to make beats on it. So I would make beats. And from these beats, I would just write songs. And I had a lot of musician homies. So they joined the band with me. And we went to the studio, started recording songs. So to me, at 15, 14, it was like, holy shit. Like, we're doing it, you know what I mean? But it was always still, like, that independent spirit because we were still paying, well, I was still paying for the studio time for myself. I knew guys that would, like, do photo shoots for us. You know, like, I was paying dudes to print out the CDs and the sleeves and stuff. So it was always that spirit of, like, yo, if nobody else believes it, we believe it and we can make it happen. And it really did start to impact, like, seriously, in a low-key kind of major way, like, it was dope.
In that time, when you were making that music and feeling that energy, when you were 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, you felt like it was something groundbreaking and something, like, the magnitude of it was just so awesome and so great. Looking back, if you even have any of your earliest music, how does it make you feel? Do you cringe when you're just like, oh, this is just so, like, untrained, unfocused, or do you hear it and you're just like, you know what, like, I was trying to get here, but I was right here, but I see the gap that I need to fill.
For me, it was cringy, like, ew, that sounds horrible. And then it was like, yo, I've really been doing this for a long time. Like, this is amazing. So it was like those two things where, like, I heard my voice and my voice sound mad ugly. Like, because I wasn't used to, like, recording in the studio. You would just be used to singing live, so it would sound different.
What's the difference between singing live and in the studio?
So when I'm singing live, I can almost do anything, and because it's in the moment, it could just go over like, oh, oh, oh. But if I'm in the studio, it has to be like, oh, oh, oh. It really has to be, like, direct and intended on what you're doing, like, it has to be there. So, like, you can't really just fake it in the studio because everybody will hear it and everybody will point it out and be like, yeah, we need to do that again. So you just like keep hitting it until it's like directly how you want it to be. That's why a lot of people don't like being in the studio because it takes time. Because you can't just go in there and just sing it and it's going to be over with real quick. Like, no, you got to be like, that first line, we got to make sure that line is right. Because a lot of people don't realize it's not just notes. It's the intent. It's the character. It's the way it sounds, your delivery. Some stuff can sound sad. Some stuff can sound sexy. Some stuff's got to sound hard. And it's all in the way you deliver it. So some things like auto-tune and things can't bring. You as a human have to bring. That's where it can get very meticulous in the studio because a lot of people don't have the patience for it. It's either that or you think the studio is a place where it's like, yo, we gonna bring girls, yo, we gonna smoke all the weed up, but like never do any songs. So it's like people either look at the studio as that or that, but the real people that love being in the studio, yo, it's like home. Like I could be in this motherfucker all day. You could hook up a keyboard and some speakers and we could like jam all night long.
So let's talk about the Baltimore music scene. As you're growing up musically and in the flesh, when did you start making contact with other people in the Baltimore music scene? And when did you find people that had that honest-to-God talent that were living in the same area as you?
Yo, to be honest, the most honest-to-God, amazing, blow-your-mind talent that I saw as a kid growing up doing like all the gospel music shit, like where you came across like some of the best singers, you know, some of the best singers that eventually went on to probably really only do background work, but it was dope shit. Like you would look around and like somebody was singing for like Vivian Green, or somebody was singing for like Tone, or like my sister Bobby Rush, she was singing for like B.B. Winans, Charlie Wilson, like all these amazing people, like doing David Letterman and Ellen and things like this that you would never know of, because they're the people in the back that the light's not really on, but they're the people that are really helping these people. So back in that time, there were people that were dope that were just starting that are now like doing amazing things because they put in that work. I really saw a lot of mind-blowing talent there. Around this circuit here, what you realize is the hard work that you have to put in, and the work ethic, should I say. A lot of talented people, unfortunately, are very lazy. Because they're dope as fuck, they feel like people are supposed to come to them and be like, yo, oh my God, I worship you, you know, Nut Goblin and all this stuff. I need you to do this for me. I need you to do this for me. And it doesn't work that way. You know, you have to be out there. You have to, you know, show your face. You have to let people know that you're available. and a lot of super duper talented people, for some reason, don't do that. It's because they're super dope. You know, in all their lives, they've been told, yo, you are super dope.
So they don't have to try hard.
Exactly. It's a lot of super dope people bias, too, when it comes to, like, anything. Even in podcasting, it's a lot of super dope podcasters that, like, excuses will be made for them, things will be given to them because they're so dope. You know what I mean? So it's like you notice that, and they can start to have this entitlement. So it makes them not want to work as hard. But the people that don't get told they're super dope all the time have to work hard and realize that it's a grind, and realize that it's hard work and it's constant hard work that you have to put in.
In the Baltimore music scene, what do you think is missing? Because I every once in a while I'll ask somebody this on my podcast. Does Baltimore, is its biggest crime just being between Philly and D.C., or is there something deeper beneath the surface that, you know, we have to examine ourselves to help put Baltimore on the map?
I always say that, like, Baltimore is probably, like, a cursed place just because it's some of the most talented people here, but, like, the opportunity never seems to present itself. And now we're starting to see a change because of, you know, all the things that are happening now climate-wise. So we're starting to get that light. But I mean beforehand, the 20, 30 years beforehand, where there were still dope people here, where there were still amazing producers and musicians here that were not getting that look at all. Or it could be that thing, you know, it's always a story that's told, yo, it was this dope group back in the 70s and 80s that just fucked it up for everybody, and now they don't want to fuck with Baltimore. It's like, that doesn't sound right. Yeah. They're drug addicts everywhere. They're inconsistent people everywhere. They're liars everywhere. So why, like, just here is that being, you know, so looked down upon? I don't know. I seek to find out, though, because they're going to know about me, ultimately us, either way, because we're all coming and we're all reflecting one another and we're all working hard. And at the end of the day, you can't help but not hear it because it's too much happening here. It's a lot of shit happening here right now. Like, even earlier we were talking about, like, JPEG and Butch Dawson and all this great shit that's happening. It's happening for all of us.
Definitely.
It's really happening for all of us. It's just about how you choose to appreciate it and what you choose to do with it. Like, these people take opportunities and they make it what it is. You know, nothing is handed to anybody. Nothing is easy. We're all out here putting in work and trying to be the best that we can be. But when we have these opportunities, we have to make them as best as we can.
Yeah, absolutely. And touching on what you said a few seconds ago, I definitely felt some type of way when I was at Afropunk seeing JPEG Mafia, and I was just like, damn, this nigga, like, is repping Baltimore to the fullest. Like, that's just fantastic.
Absolutely.
Who are some of the black artists in Baltimore that you're really digging right now, that you're really enjoying their work?
Man, excuse me. I'm digging everybody, man. Like, I like to dabble in a little of everything that I can put my hand on. Right now, I'm really digging Bobby Rush, Black Star, Easy Jackson, Mr. 14th. Man, there's so many people. Randy and Infinity Knives, Al Rogers, Butch Dawson, JPEG, Abdu, Joy. It's a lot of people, man. Micah E. Wood, Life on Planets. It's a lot of stuff happening, man. So, like, I just really admire everybody's movement. And much love to everybody, too, like, because there's so many cool people out here that are doing their things that I really, really, really dig.
Okay. Earlier when you were answering that question, you mentioned how you like to dabble in a lot of different musical styles and genres when it comes to listening. Now, when it comes to creating music, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're a singer, you're a songwriter. Are you a producer?
Yep.
Do you rap at all, or is it just strictly?
I rap a little bit.
But it's mostly singing?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just rap when other people ask me to.
I gotcha. So I guess the songwriting came first, but then what came after that? And then as I've been listening most recently, it's been like real funky. Like it's been reminding me a lot of Dame Funk. Have you ever heard of him before?
Absolutely. I love him.
Yeah.
I got to meet him a few years ago when I was in California.
So I was in California when were you in California?
2015.
I don't know if I was there then. Where did you meet him?
I met him. There was a rehearsal he was doing. And you know how they have those little rehearsal studios?
Yeah.
He was in one of those. I was with my homie Reggie. He played drums for him.
Okay.
So I got to like actually meet him and like talk to him. It was like, yo, I'm talking to Dame Funk.
Okay.
Like, it was amazing.
So I went there a few years ago. I met him like every summer or like a few summers ago. Stone's Throw was hosting a pool party at the Line Hotel.
Word.
So I went there one day and I was just like, oh shit, like maybe I'm gonna meet, you know, Peanut Butter Wolf or something like that. And I was just drinking with my friend. I look and like I kind of do the double take. I'm just like, oh shit, Dame Funk. So then my friend who was living in California, he was just like, yo, Dame, like, he's taking a picture with my friend. He's coming all the way from Maryland. And I was just like, oh, what
yo, that's
the
so
fuck?
Tight.
Yeah, he was such a chill guy. It was really dope.
He really is.
He was DJing for a little bit. It was just such a great experience. But when Matt put me onto your stuff and I was listening to it, I was just really getting those really heavy, funky vibes. When did that start coming out of you?
To be honest, yo, that shit has been in me. I can remember like being a child, like so before my father had a church, my uncle had a church. So I've been literally playing drums ever since I was like 2 years old. So I can remember being on, you know, like either the front row or like the steps of his pulpit and like that funky shit just being in there and just seeing people rock, like a whole church full of people rock to that groove. It's been in me since then. And I think the more I started to develop my sound, I just was like, man, this is it. Like, it just came out of me so effortlessly. Like, I think because people think about funk as one thing, but it's not just one thing. It's kind of like everything, if you really think about it, which is what makes it so dope. It's like, it is the blues, it is jazz, it is bebop, it is rock and roll, it is hip hop. It's everything, you know what I mean? So even now, with a lot of the 808 shit, that has a lot of funk influence to it. Because it has that heavy bottom that can control you. You know what I mean? So it's just like, it's that same thing. It's just a different type of drums. But that bottom is always there and it's consistent.
What do you mean by the bottom?
Like the 808, the do-do-do.
Okay,
I see. Shit that just keeps driving you. Do-do. That's that same. It's the same thing. So it's just like, it's today's version of it. But the funk is still alive, like you said, with Dame Funk, with myself, with a bunch of other people that realize that, with Life on Planets, with a lot of people that are still doing that. It's still a thing. It's just not being marketed because it's not looked at as sexy anymore. You know what I mean? At one point it was. At one point it was marketable. Now it's kind of like looked at as a retro act.
Really?
But, hell yeah. But you realize that everything is cyclical and everything comes back. To be honest, nothing ever leaves. Hip hop was nothing but bebop. People were rapping before 1975. They've been rapping. So it's the same thing, the same huh, the same noises, the same everything. Where do you think it comes from? From being on a fucking shack porch playing an out-of-tune guitar. It's all that, from being in the blues to being in, it's all just like stacking on top of each other. It's all the same thing. And yeah, well, I'll just say all that to say it's been there forever. I'm just really starting to like just let it out as much as possible.
And while we're in the same vein, let's talk about your newest effort, Function. Yeah. You released that like within the last few weeks or?
No, I released that in October.
Oh, October of 2018.
Yeah, yep. So I released that then. We had a release show at Disco Bar. So shout out to Malcolm Lomax. He got that for me. And that was a dope time too. So that was fun. I recorded that at Black Star Studio at Invisible Majority. I go through these modes where I like making beats. I love making beats all the time. But it's not like I got a song idea, you know, just for no reason. Like the music will either call to an idea or I'll just have this moment where I just want to write. And at this moment, I just had a bunch of songs just coming out of me where it was like, yo, I just want to record some songs. So I went to his house and recorded it in a few weeks. And it was fun, man. It was just something that, because it was so spontaneous. It wasn't something that I wanted to do, which I think made it even more dope that it just came together that way. And yeah, man, we're still rocking it today.
I like that you said that what made it a little bit easier or better is that it's not something that you had really set out to do. It's just something that you're really feeling. Because I've definitely found in my experience, some collaborations or some things, when it comes to creativity, you can't really force it. People think that creativity is just, it is something that, you know, channels throughout you and it's something that you can harness and kind of control. But it's not like I'm creative. Like, there is definitely a method to it. There's a science to it. There's definitely a formula. And like you were saying before, people think that creativity is just like being talented without the discipline. I really think it's the discipline that comes first. And then if you're talented, I mean, that's when you're really gonna get off. So I think it's great that you mentioned that.
You can see who's really been putting in the time and who hasn't. Because especially when you show up as a person that has been putting in time, it's easy to expose people that haven't. So it's like, wait a minute, why aren't y'all doing what they were just doing? Because, so it could kind of like poke holes in people's shit if you're not careful. And that's why I really love people like Kobe Bryant so much, because it's like, yo, this dude was always prepared. People like Prince so much because they were always prepared. You know, like people like Dilla because they always were prepared, or they always were ahead of the game or ahead of the curve as far as what was happening next. Like, it's so many people like Sly Stone and George Clinton that really like were ahead of the curve and knew what it was going to be and like knew what it would forever be. It's like you make it simple, you know? And that's why it's so dope, because it's not that hard.
You gotta stay true. And
exactly.
Once you just keep on doing that long enough, and then it's everybody else will eventually catch up.
It's true.
You know?
It's so true. It's like you just become a better you. It's not like, yo, now I'm dope. It's like, no, you were always dope. You just gotta clean this up. You just gotta tune this up. And there it is. Like, now you're ready to be presented. Not it's done, but now you're ready to be presented and go out and keep growing and keep, because now you're there, so you could take a little bit of this, take a little bit of that, and you can just become like this thing that's like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, so that's really what it's about, because we never stop learning. We never stop experiencing or growing. That's never a thing. So that's one thing I think people need to keep in mind as well. It's like, once you get to a place or a level, that doesn't mean that, okay, now I can chill. It's like, no, now it's time to go harder. Now it's time to go more, you know?
That happens all the time. You want to get to a point, and then by the time you get to that point, you're just like, man, I don't even really care about this anymore, because, like, I'm trying to get to this point
exactly.
Now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, there's always, like, yo, I can't wait for this show. This show is about to come up next week. Oh, my God. And it can never get here quick enough. But then, you know, it's here, and it's over. And you're like, damn, I was waiting for that shit for like a month. So then it's like, okay, well, now what? But if you put yourself in that position, there will be nothing. But if you got another show the day after that, or you got another session the day after that, it's always something for you to constantly be getting into. You know, it's just about like how much you want to do. And I realized that I really just like doing what I'm doing. So I would never say, like, if you're not doing what I'm doing, you're not doing it right. Because it's not true. Again, everybody has their own speed and their own pace of doing things. This is just what I like to do. I've always enjoyed doing this. You know, from the first time I ever stepped into a studio, I never wanted to leave it. Like, the studio just sounded like, what? You going to the studio? And it wasn't nothing amazing. It was something some dude made, but it was like, wow. You know what I mean? So that's just what it's always been for me.
I want to get back to your multi-hyphenate nature, singer, songwriter, producer, and occasional part-time rapper.
Right.
You also throw a lot of parties in the Baltimore area that are heavily influenced by music and the arts.
Yeah.
Did you start hosting these parties because you couldn't find the vibe you were looking for, or what?
I always wanted to throw a party, but I'm not really like the party throwing type. So I just wanted to find like a cool way to do something to include everybody, to make everybody feel, you know, like they could all come. You know, like a lot of times parties have certain feels to it where you could be like, okay, like only certain types of people can come here. This is for like these guys, or this is for like those people. So, like, I wanted to be like, yo, everybody, those guys, these people all come together, y'all back there, we all just make one fun time out of it and just have a good time. That was my thing. I just enjoy giving people a good time and just sharing good music with people and just seeing them dance and enjoy themselves, really. I like to see all the other people that are throwing really cool parties, like the 808 Sad Boy, he throws a cool party. It's a lot of people that throw a lot of dope parties, like the girl power parties. It's a bunch of things, man. So I try to just, you know, keep it going and keep building on the really cool culture that we have of partying around here. I would like for it to really be something like that.
What was the last party you had? Where was it at?
The last party that I threw was this past July. It was the second Thursday at the Crown. So I throw a party every second Thursday at the Crown called The Function. So it's basically, it's not really a party. I mean, you can call it a party, I don't care. But I like to call it a review just because it's just not people dancing all the time. I have performers. I have, like, spoken word artists come up. People might read from a book or whatever. I do this thing called The Function Scramble. It's kind of like an ode to the Soul Train Scramble where I have a guest come up and guess who I'm talking about on the scramble words, and whoever wins we get a drink ticket. And then from there, we just dance all night. So, yeah, that's really been it. And it's called The Function, T-H-A, The Function.
And you said that those are every second Thursday at the Crown?
Yep. I'm going to be on a little break for the next 2 months because I'm going to be going on a tour soon. But November 14th, we're back at it. So if this is on before November 14th and you hear this, come and check out The Function, baby.
Yeah, it'll definitely be out before November 14th. excuse me. We're going to start wrapping up here. So you're going on tour. What else you got coming up next?
I'm going on tour. I just put out a beat tape called Broadcasting Live from WEFUNK. That had about like 14 tracks on it.
Didn't you just release a new single too with somebody?
I did, yes. I dropped a song called Focus. And then yesterday I dropped a song called Pussy with the homie Black Star.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
that's a really, like, fun, you know, like, club party song. That shit is tight. You know, like, real high energy. It could really be something that could be on, like, a movie or something like that.
Word.
It's one of those. So just doing that, constantly, you know, trying to collaborate with people, really trying to always hit the road. I'm trying to go out of the country for as long as possible and just experience as much as I can. I know that, like, music will always be what it is that I do, but on top of that, I'm ready to get in more like a creative director mode where I can lend other services, you know, because I realize that my brain is just like a valuable thing, and along with doing great musical ideas, I can do other great creative ideas. I can write, I can, you know, throw parties, show programming, you know, all kinds of things. So I guess I'm just, at this point, trying to realize all the things that I do.
Word. All right, so we got to wrap up here. Matt's telling us that we're taking too long. how can people get in touch with you if they want to learn more or listen?
You can check me out on Instagram at JoshPMA. On Facebook, it's just Josh Stokes. And you can find all my stuff in one of those two places.
Word. All right, well, Josh Stokes, thanks again for sitting down with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Much love.
Word, word. All right, we're done.
Truth or dare, as I stare in your face, when you tell me all the things you want me to do to you, while I play in your hair and your face tells me exactly all the things you wanna do to me too. I wish I could read your mind just a little more, just for this time, so I can make sure you get everything you ask for. I know you won't refuse playing this game, even if you lose, you would be a winner. But you play like you're no beginner, baby. I'm waiting to touch me, baby. I'm waiting to kiss me, I'm waiting to love me, baby. I'm waiting to love me. I'm waiting to touch me, I'm waiting to kiss me.